Party?
At 6:30, guys, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. First item is review and approval of the minutes from the prior meeting. If anybody has any additions or changes, if they'd be kind enough to share them, otherwise I'd look for a motion to approve the minutes, please.
I'll make a motion.
A motion to approve, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That will take care of our minutes. Next up, we've got a public hearing, zoning amendment to allow childcare facilities as accessories to non-residential uses.
All right, so I'll take over now and just give a brief introduction to this topic. SunCAC, organization that has a strong presence in Casson here already, has made a request to the city of Casson to operate a childcare facility at a proposed location. Their intention is to purchase this location at 202 Fifth Street Southeast, which is the old Opportunity Services building for anyone looking for another reference. The location here just down the road from City Hall. They're looking to consolidate a lot of their services that are already in Casson, including the food shelves, and then they also want to put on a senior dining program, an outreach center, and the Head Start program, which is currently on Main Street. And so with that, the location is located within the I-1 Business Park Light Industrial Zoning District. That's this light color. City Hall is right here, same zoning district all around. And then this parcel here is the exact proposed location for this. So in the zoning code, it has a list of defined principal uses and accessory uses. The accessory use for the principal use for this proposal falls under the social assistance, welfare, and charitable services principal use. However, staff does not feel that the Head Start component specifically falls under that same definition, mostly because that's already defined elsewhere in the city code. It's already like a separate component. However, in this case, since it's more of a accessory to all the other operations going on at SunCAC, that kind of leaves an opening in our zoning code where something like this would have to be considered further at our level. In the accessory uses table, child care is only allowed as an accessory use in residential districts, but not in commercial or industrial districts. Whereas if you had like a standalone child care facility, not as an accessory, but as a principal use, you could have that in a lot of other districts. So to handle this situation, staff are recommending a change to the zoning code, a text amendment to the zoning code, that would allow for child care facilities to exist as accessory uses to principal uses in non-residential zoning districts. So, but as a conditional use, so any applicant wanting to operate a child care as an accessory use would also have to go through the process of conditional use permitting, which is not unlike larger child care facilities as principal uses already have to do that. And then the zoning code also specifies a number of use-specific standards for a child care facility. Some of them are more geared towards child care facilities in residential districts, you know, being that they can't generate like extra traffic on residential streets, or the outdoor area has to be so many feet from a residential street, things like that. So some of them would generally apply to this sort of instance here where it's in a non-residential area. But yeah, that's essentially the situation that we have on the table for this evening. If there's any questions.
not to beat the dead horse, but there is no creative way to work the Head Start preschool program into social assistance, welfare, charitable services, kind of bypassing this whole process?
Well, that is one option. You could, since there's no, like, actual definition in the zoning code, you could potentially, do it that way, where you, you know, have a separate definition that could allow for accessory uses. I do think it's better to do it this way.
One issue with that would be, for example, like, if you think about the I districts, you know, what if there was a business that had, wanted to do an internal childcare for their employees, for example? You know, something I thought of that doesn't cover this one.
Pull your mics down from here.
What's the problem?
Microphone.
Talking to your microphone.
I can't hear you.
Pull your mic down, please.
I guess one of the issues I saw was, well, what if you have a business that comes into an I district and they have a number of employees and they decide they want to do internal childcare? So this would give an opportunity to that, kind of create that framework for the conditional use permit they could follow at that time. You know, Casson is a different user base than some communities, but for example, where I worked previously, they had some larger canning factory, for example, where they had migrant labor that was coming in and had children. You know, it would have been something they would have been looking at doing. So, I mean, I think where Ian's going is it does give you a little bit more flexibility to create that framework now for if there was something to use in the future. But it certainly is up to your judgment what you want to do with it.
And this is purely as an accessory use. You could not put a dedicated daycare facility into an I, pardon me, I-1.
Yeah, that's right. It would be an accessory only.
I think those are my questions, unless anybody else has any questions.
I think I'll wait till after the public hearing.
Well, that said, we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. If anybody has anything they'd like to share, if they'd come up to the podium, please. And if you would, start with your name and address.
My name is Neil Witzel. I live out south of Casson here. I'm on the SEMCAC board. And as far as conditional use, the previous building was being used by, for social services, by the current owners. We're looking to buy that building so we could use it for multiple purposes, including the daycare portion, which is really only so many months out of a year. It is not a 12-month program. In addition to that, the mentality of, I was also a director of nursing for Bear Creek Services in Rochester for over 7 years. Some of our clients came to the Opportunity Services buildings here in Byron and Rochester and Casson. And the mentality, if you want to put it that way, the folks that were served there was more like children. So I don't see an issue with that building being used for daycare. Well, if you want to call it that, actually it's better than that. Secured doors locked, everything else would be done there at Opportunity Services building. Be used for very similar business to what had already been there.
Good evening, Commissioners and staff. My name is Jennifer Hengel. I'm the Executive Director at SEMCAC, and my address, my home address is 303 River Street in Rushford, Minnesota. That's where our main office is located. SEMCAC has been in existence for 60 years this year. And it was founded on the eastern portion of southeast Minnesota, so in the Rushford area, and it spread west and began serving Dodge County in 1975. So we have had a presence here for 51 years in Dodge County. I did bring some brochures if you want to see some more information about SEMCAC. And I'm here this evening with some Neil Witzel, our board member from Dodge County. Tim Joseph is going to stop by if he can because he's also on our board of directors. And we have a 21-member board of directors that operates our nonprofit agency. We have three board members from each of our counties. And we're currently looking for a consumer representative in Dodge County, too. So we do have a vacancy on our board here in Dodge County. It's our only vacancy right now. So I'll just put that plug in here, too, while I'm here. Our mission is to empower and advocate for people to enhance their self-sufficiency by maximizing community resources. And we really feel that this opportunity that's presented itself to us will allow us to bring our services together and to maximize our own resources to help people. And we also connect people with community resources from around the county. So right now, we're looking at bringing our outreach center and our food shelf to this new location. We weren't necessarily looking for a new spot for Head Start, but we were looking for a new spot for our outreach and our food shelf. The current building where we are leasing has been for sale off and on over the past year, and we're never quite sure if it's going, you know, how long that lease may be there and how long we'll have a home there. So when we saw this building, actually our Head Start director, Tara Blum, noticed the building was for sale and first told me about it probably around the same time last year. And when we went by it and ever since the first time we went through it, it just seems like it's set up just right for our purposes. So we would be able to have our food shelf on one end, our outreach center offices, and what that means is that family homeless prevention programs, connections to the Catherine Manorville Care and Share Program, Family Flex Fund, the Salvation Army. Our staff all operates a lot of the programming in Dodge County to help people with crisis financial assistance and those kind of programming. We also have an IT specialist that would move into this space. And then our senior nutrition program currently operates out of Sunwood Manor in Casson. I mean, we've kind of been looking for a new home for that program as well. So we'll be able to bring our senior nutrition operations to this facility. And those meals are actually prepared at a kitchen in Rochester. And the big Campbells are brought to the site. And then not only would seniors be able to dine at that facility for their 11:30 meal Monday through Friday, but we also dish up Meals on Wheels trays from that site then and deliver to Claremont and West Concord and Hayfield, Dodge Center, Casson, Manorville. I think I got all the communities where Meals on Wheels are delivered here in the county. So it'll just be a really nice location for that to happen. And then also the opportunity for Head Start. We weren't necessarily looking for a Head Start site. We've had a wonderful lease arrangement for many years and really valued that relationship. But to make this project work, we're going to have to bring our Head Start program into this site just with the way that our funding is, and we need to be able to pool those resources in order to move to this location. That is what's thought about my conversation with the city staff and this possibility of potentially the zoning amendment. So it is, as Mr. Albers said, it is the same use as the former occupant, the Social Assistance Welfare and Charitable Services. I will say that Head Start has very strict federal guidelines that we have to meet in addition to state and local, that we do have to provide 35 square feet of indoor space per child. We do have to provide 75 square feet of outdoor space per child. We have enrollment or a capacity or licensing to serve up to 18 children, but we keep enrollment at about 15 at that classroom. And I will say, too, that Head Start is much more than preschool, and it's much more than childcare. We provide nutrition services. In fact, our health coordinator is here this evening as well, Lori, who will be officed out of that space. So it's not only physical health, it's mental health, it's dental health. It's supports for the families, linking them up to resources in the community, helping to make sure that they can move towards self-sufficiency. And it is for income-eligible families, so it is a type of childcare service for people in order to keep people in the workforce and that they get at a reduced rate then, so and no cost for the family while they're working or going to school. I will just mention too that this use is consistent with the land use and reuse goals that we read about in the comprehensive plan. We are planning for all off-street parking, off-street drop-off and pick-up for our Head Start kiddos. As I mentioned, the safety and licensing is our top priority. And I'll just say that we do feel like the request is very narrowly tailored, that it's just an accessory use, just secondary to the main use of our social and charitable services. And so we really don't want to alter the character of the property there with this request. And I'm available to answer any questions that you may have about SEMCAC or our proposal, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak this evening and to tell you a little bit more about what our plans are.
Okay.
Jennifer, where's the outdoor childcare area going to go? The, you're talking about a playground sort of thing? You kind of know where that's going?
Yes, correct. So we would be looking at the Head Start on the north side of the building. It just seems like that's what will work out best. So there's a door out that northeast corner. So we'd be changing the fencing a little bit in back. We'd be using part of the already hard surfaced area for some hard surface outdoor play for tricycles and those kind of things.
Sure.
But then we'd like to extend the fence and actually go out the out front with the playground area, looking at about another 1,500 square feet of playground space, and with the correct setback requirements and the fencing and all of that kind of thing, and working with the city staff, we feel that we can go out about 25 feet and then over about 50 to get
all
to
right.
that 1,500.
Thank you very much.
Yep. And we're looking at leaving it grass or just mulch area for the playground space.
Sure.
Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Please.
My name is Ron Carlson. I'm at 61698 257th Avenue, Bannerville. They lease a building from me now on Main Street. And my biggest concern for the taxpayers of Casson, you know, this is going to be tax exempt and they're going to lose, you know, now the taxes are close to $23,000 a year. And with them being tax exempt, I think the citizens of Casson, I think, you know, they're here now, they're not bringing any more business, they're operating here now, and my biggest concern is the taxes. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Jerry Berg, 506 Fifth Avenue Northwest Casson, and I have nothing against the proposal. Looks like a good idea. The only thing I wonder about is the process you're going through to achieve it. If you read the first paragraph of 154.069, which you reference, it basically kind of implies this isn't really the way to go. If you make this change, I assume that's for every building in Casson in the future, which may or may not, you know, be what we want. Perhaps the CUD would be best, so it applies only to this situation. Yeah, I guess that's about it. I just think your process maybe should be done on another avenue. Thank you. I'm not against the program.
Ian, just some clarifications. We are looking at a COP. That's what this is for tonight?
Well, we have to amend the zoning code first, and then the proposal for the zoning amendment is to then require a CUP.
Right.
Yeah. You can't skip right to the CUP first for this case.
Is that specifically in the business district or what?
It's just not listed under the permitted accessory uses for any district.
I don't understand. If I want to put a oversized shed or something in my backyard, I could go to a CUD or CUP, right? I wouldn't have to go through this process.
For child care?
Oh, I see. It's child care. Okay. Okay, if you end up doing a CUP, so it only applies to this
That's what's being proposed, yeah.
Okay, didn't say that.
CUP.
Just talking about the amendment is what the...
Right, because the CUP hasn't been applied for yet. We have to set up the mechanism first and then do the CUP.
Well, I don't understand the kind of the description of the meeting. You said you were going to propose this amendment so you could put a child care system in there. You didn't say anything going through to a CUP after that. From what I read, you know, on the meeting notice, it implied that you do this program here, the the amendment to allow this childcare facility. Looks like you're going right directly to the childcare facility, which I don't think is maybe what we want to do. Know what I'm saying?
Right, so...
Know what I'm saying, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I don't quite follow you, sir. I mean, third page down here is subject to conditional use permit.
Oh, where is this? Okay, did I miss that somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I've written notes all over mine, otherwise I'd give it to you, but it's in the packet. Maybe it's a little bit easier to follow if you kind of walk through the...
Okay, I'll reread it. Okay, if that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah, no.
I thought you were going right directly, and it would apply to everything, so anything that came up in the future, they could just automatically...
Nope.
No, not automatic.
Okay.
Anyone else? If not, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Thank you all. Gentlemen, your thoughts?
All right, I kind of got 2 points for discussion, kind of on both sides. I guess from the concern side, with the I-1 district being allowed, what is that going to do for other potential I-1 uses adjacent to it, right? Because I don't know what's all allowed in I-1. So is there the potential for an adjacent property to maybe be detrimental to the childcare facility that comes in after the fact, that we wouldn't generally want to have a childcare facility next to?
Absolutely.
So if we have this blanket kind of I-1 is allowed, how do we account for that?
I don't think we do. I mean, your crystal ball on what potentially might move in next door to this MCAC building is as clear as mine. We don't know what the potential uses of that building are going to be 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road. I mean, we can speculate, but the reality is we don't know. And is there something in the realm of light industrial that could be detrimental to a daycare facility? Absolutely.
Ian, can you elaborate on what kind of things are allowed in I-1?
Oh, sure. Let's see. As far as industrial uses go... Scroll to the right section here, sorry. You can do animal / pet services, building services, business services, equipment services, professional services, wholesale retail, commercial, recreational facilities, buildings used for research and testing labs, breweries, wineries, or distilleries, maker spaces, printing, indoor rental equipment, rental storage units, light manufacturing, warehousing and distribution facilities, contractor yards, outside storage, manufacturing and sales areas, nurseries and greenhouses, like gas stations, auto repair, car washes.
Okay, I think I get the gist. Yeah. So of those, some of those, and I think you mentioned this in your report, some of those will be limited by the presence of a childcare facility. The brewery,
yeah,
I think, comes to mind, obviously.
There's a buffer zone there, isn't there?
Some of those other items, given the space restrictions of this particular site, is probably not going to be an issue in the adjacent site, because they're relatively small parcels here, right? Some of my concern would be maybe not this particular site, but since we're doing it for the whole city, you know, what could happen somewhere else? So that's kind of my hesitation on on the I-1. On the flip side, I would say, do any of these zones, would we be okay with any of these zones listed? You got RC, C-1 through C-3, and then I-1, not requiring the CUP, right? So if we've got zoned RC, can we skip the CUP requirement for the accessory and make it easier for childcare to be set up in those locations?
Yeah, we don't have to require the CUP and just make it as of right. I would just advise against that, because I think we want to have a little bit more control, because of the compatibility aspect of it. And you lose that if you don't have a CUP process.
We've had some individuals try to sneak daycares in some pretty interesting parts of town. So I guess having some structure around this and some review would be at least my preference.
Okay.
I kind of like the idea of a conditional use permit.
Yeah, the downside of the CUP is obviously, you know, it's got to come to this meeting and city council every single time we have an applicant that wants to do it, right? So it's just a drag on potential business.
Maybe.
Just for consideration, you know.
First time in 10, 15 years that somebody's come looking to put a daycare in an industrially zoned part of town, so for whatever my experience and perspective is worth, it's not something, I mean, like electronic signs, we were dealing with those constantly. And I think we still have a conditional use permit in place for at least part of the putting up a sign type of thing, so. I think the conditional use permit process allows us to look at each individual proposal within the scope of what part of town it's in and what's currently around there, and at least have the discussion. And truly, there have been people that have tried to sneak daycares in some very interesting buildings at times, and hopefully this gives us the opportunity to nudge them towards a better solution.
Okay. And I suppose the concerns with the adjacent I-1 properties, we could alleviate that some on the CUP with certain screenings and whatnot, right? If that's not already required by other means.
I think that'd be part of the process with the CUP, maybe not necessarily in this case, because the adjoining properties may not require it. But for one that did, for example, one thing that I thought of is if you did have a testing lab or a medical waste facility or something like that, that was justifiably able to be in that area, you would definitely require screening for that sort of thing, because you'd want to protect against that. Mm-hmm. Having the veterinary and the storage lots next to it, in this case, may not require it, but that's one of the reasons it would be beneficial maybe to be looking at these individually instead of kind of a carte blanche.
Okay.
I agree with the CUP part of it. I mean, we're trying to get away from some of the spot zoning parts anyway, but having come before the board, I think in cases like this, it's, yes, take some time, but I think we're able to weed out things that way and control it a little bit better.
This is all ultimately just for the accessory daycare facility.
Right,
this
so
this would not affect
like standalone childcare.
Childcare, that process would still be...
That would be the same as it is now, right?
And maybe I missed it, so forgive me, but do we have a definition of what an accessory use is or isn't?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you have
you
it?
You missed that.
Readily available. Well, but what a... the difference between, I guess, a primary use and accessory use? I mean, I don't know where that distinction lies. I just fear somebody's going to get a little too creative with some of these things and try to find a loophole to do something stupid.
Sure. I'll just try and get the exact from the code definition.
Thank you, sir. Maybe stupid was not the best word. Something a little too creative.
Well, I mean, think about a house versus garage, right? Garage is an accessory building, primary use. I mean, he'll get the exact definition, but that's how I would always think of it.
Sure.
You know.
Do.
While Ian's looking, I have absolutely no problem with what SEMCAC is trying to do. I'd much rather go and have this discussion as opposed to a spot zoning type of thing. I don't really think that's a solution. My big fear is who's going to walk in the door next? Because this impacts every, you know, I-1 zoned chunk of real estate in the town.
It also affects the non-residential zones, not just I-1. RC, C-1, C-2, C-3. Would make an accessory use for all those.
Yeah, very good point, sir. Thank you.
Okay. I have the definition. An accessory use is a use of land or of a building or portion thereof customarily incidental and subordinate to the principal use of the land or building and located on the same lot with the principal use.
Pretty broad.
Yeah.
There'd just be a lot of room to argue what is an accessory use, so.
Are primary childcare facilities allowed in I-1?
No.
If we're allowing accessory, should we be allowing primary?
Well, that would be a separate zoning amendment.
To just raise another question, you know, we're calling this the accessory. They're bringing three or four different entities?
Yeah.
I got a whole list of them here.
Oh, yeah.
Things that they're bringing together to bring under one roof.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize that SEMCAC runs it all, but is Head Start standalone right now on its own, or is it still under the parent of? I mean, obviously, it's run by SEMCAC, but Head Start is Head Start, correct?
It's under our nonprofit organization. It's under SEMCAC.
I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but I share your thoughts about worrying about what's.
Yeah.
What comes next.
In terms of allowing daycares in an I-9, not that we're here for that discussion, I-1, pardon me. I don't know what set of circumstances lead to that or why.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is if something were to happen to come to town, you know, like Tim's example, you know, of a larger type facility that would need that. But if we set up the CUP process, that's why we set up the CUP process, is to, you know, make sure that it's going to be on the right way.
Anything else? Any other thoughts, questions, comments?
Any concerns about the taxes being nonprofit in that? Is that going to affect, how will that affect us?
Ultimately, wherever SEMCAC is or isn't in Casson is going to represent a loss of taxable income. If it wasn't this building, it's their current buildings. So are the buildings they moving out? Are the buildings they are moving out of, assuming a different business goes in there, your taxes, in theory, assuming it's not a nonprofit organization, and I am not an expert in this arena. You know, you maybe you're losing 23 grand here, but you're probably gaining something in the buildings that they're vacating, or at least potentially gaining something. But it may go a little bit outside the scope of planning and zoning on that one, if you don't mind me saying that, sir.
No,
not that it's not a discussion you shouldn't have up at city council, but that would be my perspective in response to that. Well, if there is nothing else, I need a motion, please.
I'll make a motion to recommend to City Council the amendments provided to us by staff.
Is So you're referring, sir, to the recommended action on page three of our packet?
That's correct.
Pardon me. We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That would be our recommendation to the city council, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Give me, my voice triggered something on my phone.
It's all right.
Next up, and I assume it's not a public hearing, the data center zoning memo?
No, it's just discussion.
Okay. So just a discussion on the data center zoning memo.
Yeah, so just very briefly, there's been some recent discussion or topic discussion around data centers over the past few months. Smith, for example, has been putting on a series of data center discussions throughout the region. I had the opportunity to go to one. Tim had the opportunity to go to one earlier on. And so through those discussions, at a staff level, we've started to engage with HKGI and Brad Scheib, our consulting planner group, just over the topic of data centers, just because it is something that could be coming to CASA in the future. Not to say it is coming or won't come, but just throwing it out there as a possibility. What does that mean for our zoning code? And is there opportunities for some regulations to come into place before the data center discussion becomes a little more real? So this memo is put together just kind of high level discussions from a zoning perspective, different definitions from around the country of what is a data center, different sizes of data centers ranging, you know, very, very small, 100 square feet, all the way up to, you know, over million square foot campuses of data centers. So huge, huge variations of what we're talking about here. From the zoning perspective, different cities handle it differently. District-wise, could be industrial or commercial and industrial. Some places do CUPs, some places do special overlay districts. Different ways of handling that, and the different performance standards as well. So these are things that could potentially be regulated through zoning ordinance, whether it's things having to do with noise or hazardous waste, water, energy usage, screening and design standards, all things like that. So yeah, different considerations there for you. So, just something that we've been discussing about at a staff level. Not ready quite yet to have a potential ordinance come, but just so you're aware of what's been going on in the background.
Not that you know everything, but my perception is that these type of operations have a pretty healthy impact on cities' infrastructure, water, power, all those good things. Is there a way to... tax is the wrong word. Is there a way to identify the burden that a potential data center could have on power, could have on water?
I'll let Tim answer that one.
Include the construction cost to...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, something we definitely take into account with having a municipal electric is the usage there. And that's something we would know very clearly.
Sure.
You know, based on what they would... I mean, they'd say it's a 5 megawatt. I mean, we just go back up to the different types. I think, you know, one thing that I don't expect to see would be anything that's a hyperscale size. That's, you know, so he's got co-located facilities and hyperscale. Like, I don't think that it's realistic to expect a $1 million campus in CASA. We just, it's not the complexion of the community, really. I mean, we don't have that kind of, you know, we're a growing, you know, rural suburban community that has Byron, you know, 3 miles away. It seems unlikely, but what you could be seeing is one of those enterprise data centers. For example, if you go up to Rochester on the kind of off of West Circle, Mayo has a data center there. If you ever get that way, it's kind of across from Hy-Vee a little bit up past where the Mayo's got they have their I think they've got their credit union there. It's a good example of one that would fit in that enterprise data center, and we would expect to see between, you know, 5 and 20 megawatts. So a good example would be the city of Casson is 37 megawatts. That's what our load is in a given year. So I mean, if you had a smaller one, you'd still be seeing a substantial electric load. So that's something we would definitely be communicating with them.
Sure.
Obviously, that'd have to be negotiated through contracts. There's definitely infrastructure that'd be needed there to upsize getting the power to the business. Just like it would be if there was another business that used a significant load. You know, EGAN, for example, has a significant load. You know, it does a lot of electrical. So on the water side, that's one thing that Ian talked about, and I've talked to a few people. You know, it's interesting when you go on one of these sort of presentations from like Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. You know, the trend now is for closed loop systems where they don't constantly use the water, because that's been the biggest pushback they've had, which makes sense. You know, obviously we're building a new water tower on the south side. I'm not interested in spending a lot of additional infrastructure dollars on something like that if it's not something that's funded by the city, right? So that's something that a good example would be, you know, up in Cannon Falls, the facility that's been approved up there is paying for a new water tower. You know, it's 41 million gallons is their allowed amount, and they're paying for, you know, $5 million towards a new water tower construction that will primarily serve them. So I think if you have the right customer or client, obviously you would work to utilize some of those dollars that they could bring to the table. So yeah, I mean, with those closed loop systems, you know, obviously it's not as much water. You know, you'd see a one-time infusion and then some top-offs periodically over a couple of years. But because that water is one of the biggest things I would be concerned about with one of these facilities. The power, you know, those contracts are between the business and, you know, their contract provider. We would act as the intermediary for them, in essence. But it would be outside of our regular city contracts that we would have with them. So, and as far as, you know, other utilities, sewer, we wouldn't expect to see a ton of that utilization. No. Road access, that's something that would have to be worked out. Depending on the site, obviously, it would make, you know, I would anticipate that the business would have to install a lot of the infrastructure for that. That would be part of their expenses of developing their site.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
What land use zone would a data center fit in?
I'm sorry, Paul, what'd you say?
What land use is this? Is a data center I-1?
Well, right now, I don't think that's one of the reasons we're looking at this. It's because we don't really have this specific business would not be, it's not delineated in the code. So, you know, you can certainly guide it towards that. I think I industrial would probably be the uses we would expect to see. The other thing you could do would be designate as I, but then also require a PUD. Just like we require PUDs for certain housing projects where it's more dense than we would expect or something like that. You would say, okay, we're going to create a PUD overlay in the I district, and it'll you know, require certain things, because then, just like the CUP process you talked about, it's in an individual basis, and you get to judge which, you know, setting the setbacks, setting the, you know, screening, you know, do you want to have the foliage screening or fence screening or whatever, or, you know, that sort of thing. Controlling for noise, that's another thing that we have to make sure we take a look at, is controlling for the noise, because where we would look at these would be areas where we would definitely guide towards limited noise. I mean, you know, obviously no one wants to live right next to one of, you know, a noisy building. And it's kind of a sliding scale. It's interesting because the more water it uses, the quieter it is. The more power it uses evaporative cooling, it uses fans, it's louder. So it's kind of a, you know, people say, well, we don't want the water use. Well, it's fine. That means it's quiet. But then when you stop using the water as much, it gets louder. So you kind of have two conflicting issues. But anyway, no, I guess that was my thought process, would be a little bit of, you know, you kind of see a couple of those cities like Loudoun County, Virginia, Brainerd, which is a Minnesota example, which is obviously good. They have it as a CUP and then industrial. You know, I think you could do a CUP through industrial, or you could use a PUD district. You would just have an overlay.
So that one that's for Mayo, that's kind of a size expectancy you would foresee coming into a community of this size?
You know, it's certainly, I mean, it depends. You know, it's hard to predict, because I know that I've had people who have asked me about 5-megawatt ones, and a 5-megawatt Bitcoiner data center is about the same size as like a semi-tractor trailer. So it's not big, you know. Now those, we get down in the weeds here, because we can talk about that's a curtailable load, right? So a curtailable load means that it's not, if Bitcoin, for example, if it costs them $80,000 to buy a Bitcoin, well, right now Bitcoin's at $69,000. So they might just say, hey, we're going to shut it off today. And so you might not have them doing the power, well, then it jacks back up to $100,000 like it was 2 weeks ago, they turn it back on again, you know, so it's, you know, so it depends on the customer, and those can be very small. You know, I had a meeting last week with, a Zoom meeting with people, through Compass, through our electric provider, because there's people who are very interested in Minnesota, you know, Wisconsin, northern climates, because it removes some of that cooling cost during the winter. You know, 6 months out of the year, you're not gonna have the same issue as you would down in Phoenix, or even Virginia, where a lot of these have gone into the DC metro. So it really, it just depends on, you know, the megawatt usage, you know. And I think that we have an opportunity, if one came in, I would definitely be like, is this the best fit for our community or not? And if I didn't feel like it was the best fit, I would just tell them that. I would say, hey, you know, I'm not looking to get a dozen of these, you know, we can't support that. You know, if I could get one nice 20 megawatt one, like that Mayo one, that's up on the northwest, that frankly, you drive past it, you don't even notice, because they did a really good job of, you know, sound buffering, and they have internal closed loop cooling system. So, I mean, it just looks like another building. And yeah, it's got a nice big lot around it, but, you know, you take a 5-acre parcel and do a 20 megawatt one, you know, these lots right here, the Clocky lots, you know, they're at 1 acre. For those ones that are 5 megawatt, if that was out in the country, they could put 10 of them on there. And it wouldn't be difficult, you know, as long as the power was there, you know what I mean? But, and the technology is changing constantly, you know, they're going away from that, you know, water usage, because that tends to be the biggest pushback from members of the public, and they understand that. So, good question, though.
There is something in here about onsite generation. I don't see where it's at exactly right now, energy plan, maybe? Would that be a problem with our zoning the way it is, if they wanted to have onsite generation?
It depends a little bit on how it's handled, you know, what kind of generation they're utilizing. So for example, if they're using like backup diesel generators, that would have to be, we'd have to work through that with the PUC, with, state of Minnesota has a lot of requirements on diesels, and they're getting more draconian. Some of the stuff, and Paul, and you're well aware of it, you know, we're doing this battery project. Well, and that might be a good combination, where if you had that, you bought batteries to, you know, fill that void, if you had an issue with like blackout times, then, you know, if you're a business, we'd utilize that, you'd probably have less impediments, right? It would require more of the electrical infrastructure, but you wouldn't have to worry about the NOx testing and all the fumes and things like that. So it's hard to speak to hypotheticals. You know, I think that it would depend a lot on the business and how it works and that sort of thing.
Okay, but say we lump these into I-1, we wouldn't have any problem with our zoning code allowing for them to have their own onsite generator from a city's perspective?
No, I mean, right now we have generators on a number of I-1 sites in town already.
Okay.
Some of the, you know, for example, like CHS is probably the biggest.
Smaller, but.
Well, sure, CHS is probably the best example, where they can flip on the generator. If it was a blackout, they can run. You know, they have a huge, you know, couple of transformers that are pretty oversized. I mean, the sewer plant, for example, here, which is an I district, municipal I, they have their own generator that covers the load for the sewer plant, which is a pretty substantial load.
Okay.
You know, we have in the past run on that if we're doing some peak shaving, or if it's something where we have a blackout, where obviously the number one thing we don't want to have shut off is the sewer plant, because that creates a cascade of effects that nobody wants to deal with. But no, so I mean, I think that you'd have to work those out, and that's why, like, I do think that I district, and maybe doing that PUD overlay where you'd say, hey, this is how it's going to be done, or you're not coming here, you know, because I think we have to control for that.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea that we bring this out in the open as far as looking at where we can put something like this, or if that were to happen. I think you look at our neighbors to the north, I think that happened to them so quick that created a lot of issues for them. I think addressing this now is, there's always that potential if they're going to come looking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, you know, seeing Pine Island's experience, for example, you know, and obviously we're in a different boat than them with size and things like that, but we want to get out ahead of it, because I do think that we want to be prepared if it does come, because if we're not prepared, then obviously you get to have, it can be very acrimonious, and we don't necessarily, I mean, I certainly don't want that, so.
Any other comments? Anything else we need to discuss this evening at all?
Open to the public, or just you guys?
It's not really a public hearing, Jerry, but.
No, I mean,
did you have?
That's why I asked.
Oh, and in terms of the data center deal?
Yeah, you had a roundtable discussion. Does it include public or not?
Not at this stage in the game, because I don't know if we have anything to present to the public, to be honest with you. So, but when we get there, by all means, we'll have a public hearing on it.
you can send me an email or something afterwards if you'd like.
Just food for thought, I guess. What is the benefit to the city if you're looking to have one come in, or are you just getting on the defensive side, or what's the proposal?
Wow. In the realm of speculating, I guess we're always trying to attract new businesses to town. But, you know, they kind of need to fit within the scope of what Casson is or isn't.
In this case, there would be basically no jobs involved after it's constructed.
I don't know, to be honest with you.
Except they just plug, take out one car, put another, it goes down. Untrained people, basically.
Maybe, yeah. My ignorance, or I don't know. If nothing else, I'll adjourn.
All right.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.